Thank you for calling the California Department of Public Health Vital Records. Your call may be monitored for quality assurance purposes.
We'll do a thing called freedom.
He's gonna press the flesh, Pappy? Do a little politicking?
I'll press you up and kiss
you. You little some bitch. You don't tell your Pappy how to cut the electorate. We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Warning. You're listening to the Agenda 31 podcast with Corey Ibe and Todd McGreevy. Agenda 31 exposes government fraud, theft, and deception. Agenda 31 endorses peaceful enforcement of the Bill of Rights by the people of the several states. Agenda 31 explains how United States citizens have forsaken their capacity to protect their own rights. Corey and Todd engage with local, state, and federal government on powerful issues of identity, property rights, law, oaths of office, taxation, privacy, and more. Their approach is rooted in the very specific legal foundation of state citizenship. Listeners of the Agenda 31 podcast are challenged to take the lowest risks with the highest rewards. Your hosts want to know, what's your strategy to make a difference? Due to the unique division of political authority in the United States, U.S. citizens are residents in every state and should not attempt to copy the strategies employed by the hosts of the Agenda 31 broadcast without first consulting legal counsel. Enjoy!
You are going to change America in a way that usually only war and fluoride can. War and fluoride can. War and fluoride can.
It's time for us to become private central banking heretics, to stop believing that this is the way life is supposed to be, because it isn't.
The courts said that there are clearly two governments in each state. We have a state government and a federal government. The state government that we see today is a franchise of the federal government, as I mentioned before, by voluntary consent to the people, but that doesn't mean the original state government doesn't exist.
Self-determination isn't for everybody.
Well, that's exactly the whole point. The 14th Amendment protects U.S. citizens from the several states, but provides no protection from the federal government.
U.S. citizens have several different qualities. One, under Title V, they're considered federal personnel. You can trace back the foundation of their identity to a document the government owns.
Wake up! A state-issued birth record is government property.
You know what? There's going to be 50 different ways to skin this cat.
Today, we don't know. We're like a hotel that checks you in but never checks you out.
That's not courage. That's a mafia-style sit-down and divvy up what's good for the bosses.
You know, you're going to have to shut up or I'm going to have you arrested.
Hey, how does it feel to be a Republican right now?
It's a hoax. It's a big hoax.
It's a little bit overreaching to think there's going to be 3,100 people trying to pay attention like we do.
Why don't we devalue Social Security numbers? Why not require financial institutions not to use Social Security numbers so that there's no longer the incentive to steal Social Security numbers?
The Social Security number is absolutely critical. We need them and we have to use them. But we have to treat them as an identifier.
Yes, we'll make slaves out of all of you.
Very much part of Agenda 21, in my humble opinion. And it's a ramp up to a United Nations September convention that's coming. It's going to be Agenda 21 on steroids.
Yeah, California is crazy.
It is.
I mean, it's out of control.
The U.S. sitting senator is suggesting using RICO laws to be applied to global warming skeptics.
We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. No, we don't have a military-industrial complex.
Only a state citizen can travel around without license plates, without registration, and without a driver's license, and not intend to break the law.
Because you can't have prosperity if you're constantly under the risk of a terrorist attack.
Who the government? Who the terrorists?
Who are the government? Who are the terrorists, Corey?
They're hard to tell the difference.
It's very difficult sometimes. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Agenda 31. This is episode 91 of Agenda 31, and you are listening to us live at agenda31.org/stream right now on Saturday evening, July 23rd, 2016. And we appreciate you joining us. I am Todd McGreevy, being joined by
Corey Ibe, waving a hand from Los Angeles, California.
Excellent, Corey. And I am overlooking the banks of the Mississippi River here in Scott County, Iowa. And we are happy to be able to bring you the lowest risk, highest reward podcast in the universe. Thank you very much for listening. Corey, you know, the big distraction of the week, of course, was the Republican National Convention. You know, never mind the 28 pages of the 911 report that were redacted and held secret for nearly 15 years, implicating a complete espionage and forsaking a relationship with the Saudis. Never mind that. Don't read that, anybody. Don't look at that at all.
Well, I'm embarrassed, Todd. I didn't even know those were released.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up. Believe me, the mass distractions are paramount, and they're everywhere. I will put a plug in for the No Agenda show with Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak. We are happy to be played back on the No Agenda stream at noagendastream.com right after their live broadcast every Thursday and Sunday, which begins at 11 a.m. Central, ends around 2 p.m. Central. Our show that you're listening to right now gets played right after that. They're on twice a week with their three-hour media assassination, and the last two episodes in the past week have given a section about that whole 28 pages. So I will point listeners to the No Agenda show to learn more about those 28 pages. There is a website called No Agenda Player. NoAgendaPlayer.com. You can go there and you can actually look and search by text on the page by topic and jump right to the clip about that particular topic. So I don't know if you can tee up a better resource to get the information that you certainly didn't hear anywhere else right there on the interwebs. So check that out. The RNC convention, Corey, you know, it's kind of like a train wreck or a slow, you know, you can't stop watching it kind of thing. You know,
right.
When you're dealing with the Trump entourage, you know, the guy, you want to like the guy, in my view, just to be totally blunt. All right. Who doesn't want law and order?
Law and order. I mean, they were saying things about I got texts from people saying, hey, are you listening to what's going on? As far as talking about the Constitution, corruption in government, I didn't actually catch the address, so I've been
okay.
Pretty busy.
It's okay. I've been very busy. There's a reason I'm even bringing this up. All right, I'm not here to crib on, you know, us versus them, Republicans versus Democrats at all. People ask, why are you doing this? You know, why are we doing Agenda 31? Why is Corey taking all the risk that he's taking? What's going on? And we have at our own website under the resources page a link to if you just click on resources, there's a link, I believe, to the code that's in California talking about the threat of communism.
Yes.
That was written, you know, I don't know if you've nailed down, it was like in the 50s maybe, it was ensconced in the California code as a warning, perhaps.
I believe it was in the 50s. It might have been in the late 40s.
Right. And it's still sitting there on the books, so to speak. It's right there. You can click to it and you can get to it at our website. And
despite a all-out attack on this code to have it removed several times. In fact, one of the people that tried to have it removed is now a United States congressman. And he said that, you know, many people have come from communist nations and that this would be offensive to them.
Yeah, and it's 1027.5 is the code,
yes.
California code. And it says the legislature of the state of California finds that, A, there exists a worldwide revolutionary movement to establish a totalitarian dictatorship based upon force and violence rather than upon law. So the reason I point this out is at the foundation of why we even give a shit about what we're trying to do here is because the government is out of control on multiple levels, and it is a symptom of global control. Call it Agenda 21, call it globalism, call it collectivism, call it whatever you want. There are forces. If you're listening to this, you already get this for the most part. I'm saying this mainly for the new people, if you will. But the tells are out there, Corey, about this struggle that I'm talking about, and they revealed themselves, in my view, at the RNC. So one of the guys got up and spoke. His name's Tom Barrack, of all names. B-A-R-R-A-C-K, Tom Barrack. He's avowedly one of Donald's best friends. They've grown up together. He was an excellent speaker. He was really good. He, you know, he came out with a microphone, no teleprompter, just ad hoc, just boom. He didn't have any crib notes. He just spoke from his heart. Really interesting guy, all right? And he tells a great story and all this, and it was a fabulous, you know, presentation. But he gets into some globalism here. I want to play this clip.
So look, we're at a tipping point. The world is a mess. this necklace of globalism that we've all talked about has crumbled and shattered into 1,000 shards. It needs a jeweler to take each of those jewels one by one, starting with America, its own diamond, and polish it. Then slowly find seamless strength, put them all back together so that what we look at is the necklace of prosperity and tolerance around the world. Globalism that we've all talked about has crumbled and shattered into 1,000 shards. It needs a jeweler to take each of those jewels one by one, starting with America, its own diamond, and polish it.
The necklace of globalism needs to be put back together, Corey. That's what this guy's throwing out. And he was the last, right before Ivanka, Trump's daughter, introduced Trump. This is who introduced Ivanka. So he was, you know, he's on the bubble. He's right there towards the end of the four-day, you know, orgy of politicism. And, you know, he was a phenomenal speaker. And he slips this little nugget in about globalism.
And now I thought I heard that the mantra was going to be Americanism, not globalism.
You got it, my friend. Okay, thank you for that. Donald, in his speech, says this.
Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo as long as we are led by politicians who will not put America first. Then we can be assured that other nations will not treat America with respect, the respect that we deserve.
Couple run-on sentences there. I think the teleprompter was moving quickly for him. But, you know, he's, you know, who do you believe? Do you believe his best friend or do you believe Don? You know, what do you do? I mean, it is the epitome of, you know, we're going to tell everybody what they want to hear. Tom Barrack throws some red meat out for the Council on Foreign Relation, neocons that are pulling strings across the planet. Hey, man, I'm in Don's circle, and I get the globalism thing, and we're gonna shine it on, everybody. Trump knows that there's a lot of people who get that globalism is hurting Americans, and so he throws out it's Americanism, not globalism. They just talk out of both sides of their mouth at all times.
Yeah, it's the right and left wing of the same bird of prey. The framers set up the country that you should never trust the federal government and don't trust the federal government. I mean, that it's clear. Even if you like the guy, don't trust him.
Exactly. And, you can't help but play this one with regards to how the choices we've been given play to globalism.
Thank you very much, Richard, and I am delighted to be here in these new headquarters. I have been often to, the mothership in New York City.
This is Hillary Clinton when she became Secretary of State speaking to Richard Haass at a Council on Foreign Relations meeting in D.C.
But it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
All right. So we know that both candidates are globalists, is what we're trying to say, minutes into the show here.
Yeah, it's, again, just from my perspective, they have a position. The way the government was put together, the people that are in federal office, they have their positions, their legitimate positions, but they're the other team. If you're one of the people, they're the other team. That's how it was set up. Kind of like if you're on a football team, you back your team, and the guys that are on the other team are not there to help you score a touchdown.
They're there to crush you.
Exactly. That's what they're there to do. That's how the game works. And the game of American politics is set up that way. If you're a U.S. citizen, you're out on the field. You don't really have a team. The refs are always going to find virtually always going to find for the other side, the government, the federal government. There's just... At least I've gotten to the point for sure, and I think a lot of Americans have gotten to the point where you just don't trust anything anybody says in government, no matter how good it sounds. I mean, 8 years ago, I thought it sounded really good, hope and change. You know, when we elected a black president, I thought that was a really amazing thing. But I don't think that it matters. It doesn't matter the color, the religion, the creed. They're all the same thing.
Yeah. Speaking of that president, I think it's worth reviewing one of the clips we played often of him, and this is him speaking in Mexico at a history museum. And this was during the height of the gun running scam going on with the federal government and Mexican cartels, Fast and Furious. And this is indicative of the duality that we're speaking about when Corey says one of the people of the several states versus U.S. citizens. We assert that the people of the several states are part of what America is, if you will, in terms of shorthand. United States is, in my view, the shorthand for the federal overlay or the federal division, if you will. And yes. In my view, United States of America, if you're an originalist, is talking about the actual states themselves that are united under a truly federalist umbrella. So it gets tricky. Language is very tricky, and it's been manipulated over the years. And listeners to this show will you know, cite different statutes that were changed when they changed the way that what definition United States meant in the code, in the Federal Register, and in Congress, and so forth. And I think that Obama, in this speech, spells out that difference pretty clearly.
I think many of you know that in America, our Constitution guarantees our individual right to bear arms. And as president, I swore an oath to uphold that right, and I always will.
And in America, he says he swore an oath to uphold that right, and he always will.
Yeah.
In America.
But at the same time, as I've said in the United States, I will continue to do everything in my power to pass common sense reforms that keep guns out of the hands of criminals and dangerous people.
They're incongruous.
At the same time in the United States.
At the same time. So it's the duality is right before us. It's right before our very eyes. So as I listen to Trump accept his nomination in the private Republican Party, here's how he put it.
Friends, delegates, and fellow Americans, I humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States.
I was truly waiting for him to say United States of America, you know, for that real lift.
Yeah.
Of Americanism that he claimed we're not about, that we are about, instead of globalism. And it was just, I'm probably reading too much into it. It's worth probably looking back at the prior, like, what did Reagan say when he accepted this nomination? What did, you know, Obama say? What did Bush say? I just haven't had a chance to do that. But I just want to mark that in time, that he's accepted the nomination for the CEO of the corporation, everybody. Don't fool yourself into thinking that he's going to, you know, be the executive officer of, well, I don't know. Let's talk about that, Corey.
Sure.
It's dual, isn't it? There just don't happen to be very many people in several states. He still is the executive. if the president, the person who is elected, I should say, is the executor of the executive branch that does, in fact, purportedly, because they took an oath of office, defend and support
Absolutely.
And enforce the Bill of Rights.
Absolutely. Has the absolute obligation to enforce and defend the Bill of Rights for the people of the several states, not U.S. citizens.
So, you know, we always question, you know, is he read in? Does he understand what we're talking about or not? I think he might be. I don't know.
Well, the president of the United States, he is the top dog in the corporation. I mean, there's a corporation called the United States. It's a government corporation. But then the term United States has several meanings to it. And that was referenced in my filing in federal court, where the commissioners here in Los Angeles were using the term wrong on purpose. And you see that all over the place. Most of the time when you hear somebody say the United States, I think what they're trying to do is get you to think of, you picture the entire nation. and that it, that being the United States. But the term United States can have many different meanings, and it just depends on the context in which it's used. It can have a meaning of being just the national government, which operates in every single one of the several states. It's located in Washington, D.C., but the authority of the federal government does operate legitimately in every single one of the several states. So you have that authority that is right here in the states with you. Then the term United States can also mean the nation among a family of nations. That means everything that comprises the United States of America, including Washington, D.C., all the several states, even the territories, that can be a meaning of the term United States. And then a third can mean the people comprised of all the states united. So there, that's from a court case. I forget what name of the what the case is. It's in my paperwork. But the court case explains the difference in the meaning. And quite often, the government, what I find is oftentimes they're referring to the federal expression of political power within this country when they say the term United States, yet they specifically want you to think that what you're what they're saying is the nation as a whole. And if that's the game they've been playing for a long time, and they're heavily reliant upon it, because that's where people get confused trying to figure out, well, the courts are so corrupt, they're not applying the Bill of Rights, they're modifying the rights. That's where they can get the confusion so often right out the gate. And I think the advantage that we have in this show, Todd, is by delineating the different political authorities that are in this country. Namely, you have the several states, you have the federal government, you have authority for citizenship under Article 4, and there's authority for citizenship under the 14th Amendment. If you're coming into this game thinking, well, the United States is just the whole country and I'm a citizen, well, you're playing checkers, not chess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking at your filing. You're talking about the one from July 13th?
The removal filing.
Yes, and that is listed as a link at the show notes in one of the recent episodes. And I'll tell you here in 1 second which one it is. I'm remembering something I forgot to take care of as I'm getting this. I'm uploading something from my phone to Dropbox real quick that we might want to talk
about. I actually
about.
Have the filing here, so let me. I'll pull it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I've got
quick.
It up in front of me, too. And
let's see.
So three definitions, United States. That sounds a little complicated, Corey. Gosh, I think this might not be for me.
You know, that's the case. I mean, that's true. Once you get it, it's actually really simple. Yeah. And you catch it all the time. It becomes, you know, it becomes natural. I'm sure that people use words in their work every day that it might be confusing. You might be a professional in your job, and the words that you use in your job might be confusing to somebody who doesn't do your job. But after a little while, you get it. And with some guidance, you know, it took me a long time to figure this out on my own and, you know, relatively speaking. But now when I have conversations with people and I lay it out, it clicks much quicker. And there's code that supports the idea of, you know, the United States. When you're dealing with local judges, when you're dealing with any type of state authority, the only term that is really applicable that they're using when they use the term United States is the federal expression of national authority, the federal power, which is located in the District of Columbia, but operates in every single one of the states. That's, I would say, I can't even think of a reason why a state judge would ever need to use the term United States as a family among a nation of family, among a family of nations. So that would be the jurisdiction of a federal court judge. You know, you don't have state court judges who decide whether or not somebody is able to come into the country or handles naturalization or handles affairs that would involve, you know, a situation of somebody in Venezuela suing the federal government or suing the state. You don't have that, at least I'm not aware of that situation. But you do find regularly that if you get confused and they say, well, like what they did with me, you know, are you in the United States? If you're not aware of the limitation or the type of words that they're using, the meaning of those words, then you're probably going to answer it wrong. And that's how they get jurisdiction all the time. That's how they end up getting you confused. If you're confused about how things work, then they win. And everything about the code is about setting up confusion, getting people to not understand what is happening. That's something that I've found in my personal experience in dealing with government.
Yeah, it's easy to get confused when you're dealing with this, what traditionally is complex, these many decades later. The family of the nation amongst family of nations is an interesting, is that from the, is that, what's the name of that site? Was it
Book of Nations? It's a court case.
Now, there's a book that we've talked about years ago when we first got talking together.
The Law of Nations.
Law of Nations.
Yeah.
Law of Nations was a document that was crafted prior to the Declaration of Independence. Correct.
The Constitution, the setup of the country, the framers referenced Vattel's Law of Nations. That was a reference material that they used in order to make sure that this new country they were setting up would be legitimate in being able to deal with other countries in trade and political affairs.
And so that family, a nation amongst a family of nations, I would say, we would propose, perhaps, is different than that globalist necklace of nations, or not. I mean, is Tom Barrack, the guy I just played, isn't he about, you know, couldn't he be said to be referencing a family of nations amongst, a nation among a family of nations?
Well, if he's referencing a global power that is one single power to handle all the nations, like what we find with Agenda 21 or Agenda 3030 now, that is a weakening of every member nation of the planet. It weakens their borders. It weakens their individual sovereignty and provides a non-sovereign entity? Didn't we play something like that?
Yes,
where
we did.
Non-sovereign entities would have more and more influence. If there's a global power that has a political influence somehow, however they set it up, they're very, very intelligent, very smart, then what that serves to do is just destroy the individual sovereignty of each nation and kind of cover that up with one global power that is the danger of globalism.
Nation states will not disappear, but they will share power with a larger number of powerful non-sovereign actors than ever before.
Non-sovereign actor.
Yeah.
That means if you have a country, whether it's the United States of America, whether it's Mexico, whether Canada, anything, if you're dealing with a non-sovereign actor and you're subject to whatever arrangement you have with that non-sovereign actor, you've given up a portion of your nation.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal that oftentimes people think, well, just, you know, can't we all just get along? It's so good. It's better. It's not. You end up having people who don't care about your country. They don't care about the resources. They don't care what happens to your country. They only care about the profits that they can extract from your country through this non-sovereign entity that they have. And that's what it's all about. Every single time it comes down to money and political power.
The traditional left versus right, us versus them that we're taught to believe is going on really comes down to top versus bottom. Those of us at the bottom, the lowly United States citizens versus those at the top that have that power. Through manipulating. Well, actually, they got consent here in America, Corey, after the 14th Amendment. I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum on the show. So if you've listened to the show, you know the shtick. And if we haven't convinced you by now, we're never going to convince you that this is worth looking at. So let's move on to what's going on with low-risk, high-reward activity. Corey takes, I think, moderate to high-risk with
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of people who are traveling around with no plates, no license, talking about it on the air and directly engaging with government. So
I don't know anybody who's doing that, Corey.
In that manner, Todd, it's not a low risk, low-risk activity. You face jail time, you lose your car. It makes life incredibly difficult, but I firmly believe it is absolutely a battle that has to happen. At some point, you have to decide, I'm no longer going to subject myself to federal authority. I voluntarily, if you have a driver's license, if you had a social security number, if you have voter registration, all the different things that set you up in this federal authority that appear to be state, it's called a state, but they all have federal employer identification numbers and they operate off the 14th Amendment. Every single one of those activities, every single one of those accounts was voluntarily set up. Nobody held a gun to your head and forced you to go in there and sign it. Now, the way the government operates in reality is the only reason why people get that stuff is because they're afraid of the government, because the government operates off of fear and intimidation. I mean, I've witnessed it over and over again, the fear and intimidation that they try and employ. And I'm so grateful to have the friends who were there to support me, Luis, Gabriela, people who have been there in court where they also stand up and help encourage. Like, that fear and intimidation is not going to work. We're going to go off the law. And so, talking about low risk, high reward, I certainly don't encourage anyone to right off the bat say, I'm not going to have a driver's license, I'm not going to have registration, and not really fully understand the impact of what it is. But the low risk, high reward activities are to begin to engage with government from the position of being an Article 4 citizen. If you have a driver's license and you've got a passport, put your driver's license away and start using your passport. That's one step. The other one is if you got a common law ID. You can have a driver's license and a common law ID. They're not mutually exclusive. It's just you bear the burden of both of those sovereigns. If you're using an Article 4 citizen common law ID, then you're availing yourself of the political benefit of being a citizen of one of the several states. And if your state is California or Nevada or Arizona or Virginia, then you would bear the burden of whatever obligations you would have by being a citizen of one of those several states. Well, right now, there's just nobody to enforce any of the laws. There's nobody there to collect taxes from you from those entities. There's nobody there to provide you representation. There's just nothing there. It's completely devoid of anybody who can enforce that authority. So right now, as far as being a U.S. citizen, there's absolutely no risk of saying, okay, I'll be a U.S. citizen and a citizen of the several states. You certainly have the ability to do that. The top game, the absolute, what I guess I would refer to as the Super Bowl of, activities as far as being one of the people, is to leave the U.S. jurisdiction, leave federal citizenship, no longer submit yourself to federal citizenship, and avail yourself of only Article 4 citizenship. Now, that's a tall order, because what it requires is having the mental fortitude, being able to stay in the game long enough that you end up getting to the point where the federal government has to provide that government. The Constitution guarantees that these governments are available to the people. Texas v. White is a fantastic case, which shows that original republic is guaranteed to exist and is presumed to have citizens of its own. It's one thing to say it in law, but it's another thing to actually live it. And I believe that it is so critically important that a percentage of the population honor their duty when they call themselves one of the people. You hear people say that all the time. Oh, I'm one of the people.
We the people.
Yeah, if you're one of we the people, if you're saying you're one of the people, then you have an absolute obligation to hold the federal government accountable and make them guarantee that your government has a Republican form of government. And that is the ultimate goal of every time I'm engaged with government locally. Obviously, I want to protect my property. I want to protect myself. But in order to effectively do that, I believe you have to establish that they first have to guarantee a Republican form of government to the state In my case, it would be the state of California, identified by its constitution of 1849. And, you know, let's assert
that the bill, that the Republican form of government manifests itself in the form of enforcing the Bill of Rights.
Correct.
That's what we call Republican with a small r. It's right there. It's a guarantee in the Constitution. It is the primary function of the general. That's what it was called back then, the general government, or now called the federal government, is to guarantee the states are operating with Republican forms of government, not communist.
Correct.
And when you are in, when you're one of the people of several states, then if you, that state is not providing that Republican form of government, the feds are supposed to enforce that. That was the compact that was established and struck to join the union so that the people would have that intermediary when their own state government got out of line. But when you volunteer yourself into being domiciled in the District of Columbia and not one of the people of the several states, and you claim you're a United States citizen, and you want to be a federal citizen with that homogeneous overlay, then you have given up your ability to protect yourself. You have what's called civil rights. And that's what, you know, is bandied about as a wedge issue ever since the 50s, is civil rights. And it's just hilarious because there was no need for any civil rights to be created or codified. Or I keep hearing this new segment on Marketplace about RFK going down to Mississippi and doing the war on poverty and creating the welfare system and how wonderful that was. And I'm just going, wow, wow, really? How wonderful is that?
It's
incredible. And it's just lauded as this basic, you know, wonderful thing that's being done is, you know, get on the welfare system, give up your inalienable rights, and then, you know, get on our farm, be in our plantation. It just is incredible. And, what did you want to wrap up the definitions of the United States inside this federal filing?
Well, I actually, now that I think about it, actually removed that part from the file. It was in one of my earlier drafts.
Okay.
And so it ended up removing it, but I'll find that.
We've talked about this before. Court case. And I've got a note here.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. When you're aware of the three-card Monty game that the government is playing and you know how to spot it, it gives you incredible power. It gives you incredible powers, may be the wrong word. It gives you very strong standing to where you can do things that, you know, many other people would say, "Oh no, that's not possible. That's not going to happen." And I don't know. I actually have some good news from my court case, which is the case here in LA of driving without a license. It's a little bit of good news. You know,
a little bit goes a long way.
It does. And it was very sorely needed. But do you want me to go into this part
sure.
of it now?
Just, by all okay. means. Absolutely.
So my case, just as a quick wrap up, I first went in and saw a commissioner. And when I first was given the citation, my understanding was I was facing a misdemeanor case, which would provide up to a year in jail. I was actually incorrect. It's 6 months in jail the way it was originally written. But what the courts do, because there's so many people in Los Angeles that don't have driver's licenses. There's people from Mexico, from Venezuela. I mean, there's just so many people without driver's licenses that the courts and jails would be completely clogged up with people if they convicted everybody who didn't have a driver's license of a misdemeanor and they had to do 6 months in jail. So what happened was, I didn't understand this until later, my case was automatically reduced to an infraction, which meant I never faced any jail time when I first went into the court. But I went in believing that I was facing a year in jail. So I was ready to prepare. I mean, I was well prepared. There was no notice that my case had been turned into an infraction. I just didn't understand that and was playing the game based on, you know, I got a lot on the line. Well, that went in Department 102, which that's the department where they handle, it's well known to be just kind of a ridiculous, there's nothing that resembles court process in that courtroom. From my observations, from the people, we can talk to Ed Brotherton, he's been in that department many times. That's with Commissioner Gast. I've watched Commissioner Gast declare people guilty for the most ridiculous things. Mainly it was insurance. People would say, she would say, do you have proof of insurance? They would bring in proof of insurance and show the court valid proof of insurance. And she would come up with some other reason that has nothing to do with the code and the way the people were charged to be able to find them guilty and they have to pay. And yet there was just nothing that could be done. Well, it's my turn to come up, and you know, we start battling, and they got really upset, and ultimately they were just pissed off because I asserted my rights, and Ann Rosenfeld, I believe, or Rosenfield, or I believe is her name. She was the city attorney who was tasked to prosecute me on this. She then, because I asserted my rights, not because I was disrespectful, not for any other reason other than they just felt like I should not be able to have access to any evidence. I should not have access to the DMV record. I should not have access to the DMV registration record of the vehicle. I couldn't use exculpatory code. They said
you couldn't make sure that the arresting officer had an oath of office.
Yeah, you couldn't make sure the arresting officer had an oath of office. The arresting officer, in her writings, was presumed to have functioned everything correctly, even though there's evidence that there isn't, and the Secretary of State is refusing to do their job. Their job as a repository of information is if somebody's required to file an oath at the Secretary of State, then if that oath is not there, they're required to issue a certificate of no record. But the California Secretary of State is not doing that. They're refusing to issue a certificate of no record because in their own determination, they've decided there's no penalty for not filing an oath. Therefore, we don't issue a certificate of no record.
I'm not even sure if you had that, Corey, that it would have even mattered with Gast.
Well, it wouldn't have mattered with Gast by any means. They're in that courtroom. That courtroom is so far out of line. It is absolutely ripe for a group of people who want to go in and catch a weasel. The absolute complete deviation from proper court process, from decorum, from even a shred of honesty, there's not one bit of it in Department 102. So I've been incredibly frustrated on air. I've said what's happened. I had to go down with Luis. We had to go down and talk to the sheriff's supervisor regarding the conduct of sheriff's deputies in Department 103. The sheriff's deputies in Department 102, they were professional, never had a problem with them. But in Department 103, not at all. Well, Department 102, I get kicked out in the morning and end up at Department 103, now facing full-on misdemeanor charges. And the way it was written up, that I was facing, when I interpreted it and went through the possible sentencing, I interpreted that as facing up to 2 years, which is, I got to tell you, Todd, it is scary. You know, like 2 years is a big deal.
That'll cause a little shrinkage.
Absolutely. You know, it's put a lot of stress on my personal life. It's put stress on everybody. I mean, you don't sleep. It's a big deal. All of this over a driver's license. I didn't hurt anybody. It's not like, you know, they pulled me over because I was driving crazy or doing 80 miles an hour through a school zone. They pulled me over, and all of this is because I won't sign a piece of paper. That's what this is about.
Well, there was no probable cause, though.
No probable cause to pull me over, given the Fourth Amendment. If, you know, the Bill of Rights directly applies to citizens of the several states. That's called the incorporation doctrine.
But when a cop sees a car, I'm going to use that word rather than vehicle or motor vehicle for...
Actually, let's do it this way. I think it's a good thing to set up. There is two different definitions.
Yep.
There's a definition of a motor vehicle and a definition of a vehicle. What he saw was a vehicle, and they have absolutely no proof that it's a motor vehicle.
And it's not. It's a motor vehicle when it does have plates with registration.
Yeah, because that's the only type of registration that the DMV offers.
And so if it had plates, it is a motor vehicle. So this is the Matrix universe that newcomers to this court are going to have a hard time swallowing. So if I don't have plates on my car, then they can't pull me over. If it's just a vehicle, right? Because why would everybody just not have plates then, Corey? We wouldn't have law and order.
Well, just because there's no plates on your car doesn't mean there isn't law and order. there are still very, you know, strict laws about conducting your vehicle. If you had a, if we went back in time where it was a horse and buggy, and you're riding a horse through town at 20 miles an hour full speed, and people are having to jump out of your way, there's no speed limit signs that said, you know, keep your horse and buggy at 7 miles an hour. But there's certainly laws and statutes and the ability to prosecute somebody who is acting in that manner.
Causing a potential harm.
Yeah.
Could be running through a saloon with a machete, swinging it at people. That's, you know.
Absolutely.
That's potential imminent harm. You need to be addressed and adjudicated.
Yeah, so there's two things at play in my understanding. If you're in a car with no plates, you don't have a driver's license, and there's no registration, and your car is a vehicle, it's just, you can look up the term, it's in Title I, Section 4 of the United States Code, and the California Vehicle Code has a definition of vehicle in California Vehicle Code 670, I believe it is. I can look that up while we're doing this, but if you're a U.S. citizen, you can't drive a vehicle. The only thing you can drive is a motor vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't be a U.S. citizen in a vehicle. That's not going to work. But if you are a citizen of the several states, then the code is very clear that there are two different types of automobiles. Now, the reason why I've made the determination that if you're a U.S. citizen, you can't have a vehicle is there are so many different court cases that show the rights of one, which is, let's say, a citizen of the several states. This is talked about in the slaughterhouse cases. The rights and privileges and immunities of a citizen of the several states are very different than the citizen of the United States. The Second Amendment is a perfect example. You know, they say you have the right as a U.S. citizen to the Second Amendment, where you can apply and hopefully get a permit to buy a gun.
Right.
That's the right you have, is you have the right to even ask for it. Based on the Second Amendment, now they have to give you the right that you can ask for it. Well, the federal government has the right to license it, control it. You have to pay a fee, background check, everything else. In that jurisdiction, that's how it works. In the several states, if you're not a criminal, then you have the right to keep and bear arms. It's not up to the government whether or not you have the right to keep and bear arms. It's incorporated in the Constitution, in the Second Amendment, a self-executing document that you have the right to have a gun. Well, U.S. citizens have a completely different set of rules that they have to follow, and they're told what type of, you know, how their identification is, which begins with a birth record. Anything that they do is a franchise of the state. It's governed under the Commerce Clause. And you can see many different court cases that I personally used to think were unconstitutional court cases. But with a better understanding, I can now make an argument that they were actually protecting, with these bad court cases that we all thought were bad, they're actually protecting the political position of the citizens of the several states. So,
what I want to throw out here, though, is it's evident every day in that court system out in California of exactly how U.S. citizens are viewed by their captors, effectively, you know, the people that have coercively forced them to come into that building, else they shall be jailed. And here's what they say to them.
Under the Constitution of the State of California, you are entitled to the following rights.
Entitled to the following rights. So as if the document itself provides the rights that you're entitled to. And as we've heard from my own county sheriff here, our rights are modifiable. So they're completely discretionary. And that's what the chattel here every morning at the morning court in California is over the loudspeaker is, we're going to tell you which rights you're entitled to versus the Constitution, which stipulates that these rights are inalienable, and here's how we're going to set it up so that the government we consent to can't violate the rights you already have. It's not a permissive document. It's a restrictive document. And when you raise your hand and say, I want to be a U.S. citizen, and I am a U.S. citizen, therefore I can get a driver's license, That's the entry point. That's the point of the foundation of your entry, effectively, as an adult into the system. You're saying, hey, tell me which rights I'm entitled to. How does it work now? You guys get to make up the rules as we go, versus maintaining your state citizenship and enforcing what they can't do to you.
Exactly. So the
so you're let's fast forward to you were in the misdemeanor court on the afternoon in room 103.
Room 103. This is on June 22nd.
Yep.
And I'm holding my ground as far as at one point, this is now Commissioner Omens is basically mocking me by saying, you know, what country do you think you're in? Because I said, look, my presence in the United States is not authorized under federal law. They have to have my consent for my presence to be in the United States. And in that context, I'm referring to the federal government. As far as being a federal citizen, I don't consent to that. So they don't have my consent. They can't impose that type of citizenship on you. But the commissioners they're not as elegant as the judge that I saw on Friday. I'll put it that way. So what they did, they ended up getting to a point where it's now 4:15 in the afternoon. I'd been there all day. They never got to a point where they could move the case forward. They never got me to admit that I was in their state. It was just a battle the entire day. I don't know how many times they're allowed to call you up to the stand, demand that you waive rights. I reserve those rights, tell you to sit down, then demand you to waive the rights again, sit down, demand waive rights. It's ridiculous. There's got to be some sort of point where they can't keep saying, we want you to waive your rights. You know, at some point, it's got to be clear that I don't waive any rights. Well, once they got to that, Commissioner Omens just said, well, I find you to be incompetent, and I'm considering appointing a public defender on your behalf. At that moment, the public defender jumped up and said, we'll take him. And then she quickly goes, we've already spoken with the people. We'll enter a not guilty plea. And on the minute order, it shows a whole bunch of waiver of rights that happen. And
the minute order is a document that should be public, correct?
Yes.
And it's the kind of the...
I think we made it public. I think we've posted it.
I think it is. I think it is too. Yeah. But for purposes of explaining what it is, it's kind of like the shorthand progress report of what went down on the case. A little syllabus, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah, just kind of little notes of what happened, and you can see
what actions were taken for the record.
Yes. And for the record, it shows them appointing a public defender, Jeanette Lee, who, absolutely, to me, committed a violation of attorney misconduct that she should no longer be allowed to practice law. It's so dangerous what she did. She put me in a position, she's put the court in a bad position.
This is the public defender you're talking about?
In it. What's that?
This is the public defender you're talking about?
Yeah, the public defender, Jeanette Lee. Her job, she admitted to discussing my case with the city attorney prior to being appointed as my counsel. I mean, that by itself is a serious violation when you're entrusted with protecting people and protecting their rights, yet you're working for the other team. That to me is the type of crime that borders on treason, because there's nothing you can do about it. When I was in the courtroom, I defended myself articulately. I was respectful to the court. I was frustrated with the court, and I enthusiastically advocated for myself and my position. But at no time did I disrespect the court. I didn't disrespect the authority of the court. I absolutely acknowledge the authority of the court, but its authority is limited. It's not this plenary authority that they get to do anything they want, like they act in there. And the reason why they act that way is they haven't had anybody punch them back in the nose for stepping over the line. Well, what Jeanette Lee did was she now put me, she's put the court in a position, she put the new prosecutor that's there in a bad position. Everybody who is now dealing with this case in 105 can be traced back to Jeanette Lee violating very, very standard attorney protocol, absolutely working as hard as she could to help the prosecution, to help the court gain jurisdiction against my consent and without my consent, and against the type of behavior that an attorney should display. So Jeanette Lee is, I think...
Go ahead, sorry.
I think she's just in a very bad position because this keeps coming back to her. I would not be in this position where I'm in today had Jeanette Lee just sat quiet, because the court didn't all the court did was throw out this balloon saying, I'm thinking of appointing an attorney for you. And that was kind of the court's signal in my mind. That was the court communicating to the public defender, hey, I'm in trouble here. I need you to be able to...
Come here and waive his rights for me, will you? Because he freaking won't waive them himself. We've tried 6 times today.
Yeah.
And it's getting late. I need to get home.
And that
I've got a dog to raise.
Right. That's exactly it. So, you know, given you expect the... I really expect prosecutors in California to... you know, oftentimes my experience with them, which has all been low level stuff, I've never dealt with anything high level like the courtroom I was in on Friday. But all the prosecutors for these small little crimes, I expect them to play dirty tricks. I expect them to do what they did in my case. But I do not expect a defense attorney to conspire with a prosecutor to violate my secured rights. Yeah. And I sincerely hope that Jeanette Lee will be taken to task at the very least for the type of behavior that she did. And I'm looking forward to getting the transcripts from that. So what happened with Department 103 at 4:15 in the afternoon after being there all day, there was a quick little 30-second thing where Jeanette Lee said, we'll take him. I've already spoken to the people. We enter a not guilty plea and blah, blah, blah.
And
all of a sudden,
we dismiss all the motions he's made prior.
Yeah, exactly. They were able to get around all the motions that I had filed.
Which were for evidence, exculpatory evidence, the oath of office. Basic stuff that, you know,
just basic stuff you're absolutely entitled to. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous that I even had to file. I didn't start off filing a motion in court. They were upset feeling like I was burying them in paper. The reason why all that paper exists is
really?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
But that was not my intention. I didn't start off with a strategy of burying them in paper. My strategy is, look, the law will take care of itself. If everybody does their job and everybody focuses on the law, there's exculpatory code, there's exculpatory evidence, there is the lack of evidence to be able to prove I was in a motor vehicle. I'm relying on the law as they claim to be relying on the law. However, in those departments, 100% Department 102 and 103, they were relying on what they felt like should happen and not the law. And so
they could have had an experience that was breaking up the monotony of just milking everybody else that came through there. You know, they could have learned something, but the challenge is twofold there. No matter how, you know, unique and groundbreaking your case might be, you might show the other sheeple how to take off their shackles. They can't have that.
Well, I'm sure that's a concern. That's why they always clear the courtroom before they call me up.
Oh, really?
In departments 102 and 103, they cleared the courtroom.
Oh my God! You said this, and I didn't really glom on to the importance of that.
Yeah. So they definitely want to make sure
the courtroom. So Luis and other friends that attended had to give special permission to sit there.
Well, they were, I wouldn't say it was permission, but they were kind of given the stink eye and like, why are you here? What are you doing here? What's your business with the court? You know, there's no more, there's nothing else going on. You guys can leave now. That type of stuff. They stopped just short of saying you're not allowed to be here.
So they use intimidation and typically expect everybody just to cower and leave and then express displeasure with those who just didn't take their first, you know, the first blush.
Absolutely. Wow. And in those two departments, in departments 102 and 103, all of the staff are on their phones all the time. You see people chatting on whatever, if it's Facebook, Twitter, whatever they're doing, they're on their phones. Yet if anybody in the spectator area, in the audience area, if they even see a phone, man, they are on you like you're in jail. They treat everybody like they're jail inmates. and that, you know, rules for us, we get to have our phone out, we get to do whatever we want, but you can't have your phone out because, oh my God, if you start recording, if you record what they call a surreptitious recording in that courtroom, and they mean it, man, they're serious. If you're recording in there and you get caught, they're, you know, they could push for, I think it might even be a felony, but it's a big deal to them. And it has nothing to do with them trying to keep other people's, you know, cases private or something like that. It's 100%, at least in Department 102 and 103, it's 100%. They are operating a completely rogue department. They have gone completely
Star
rogue.
Chamber.
Star Chamber, that's
Star
what
Chamber
it is.
102, Star Chamber 103. So at the end of the day at 103, you eminently frustrated them to the point where they semi-appointed a public defender who stepped up to say, I'll take this one. Let's plead him in so he can go forward with a hearing and a trial.
Yeah, and sent me on my way for a pretrial hearing without me being able to get what she did was waived all of my rights towards evidence. In other words, I get no more evidence at all, nothing.
Right.
And
which impacts the ability to appeal.
Of course, yeah. How am I going to appeal anything? You know, it looks like on paper, it just looks like I waived all my rights and I can't wait to be prosecuted. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
But that's not at all what happened. And once you have an attorney, it's incredibly difficult and can be sanctioned if you try and file something on your own behalf. And the public defender.
Oh, wow.
Right? So you're now trapped. You have to go through the attorney.
Oh, yeah.
You can't just go in and file that, hey, here's
you're
what happened.
You're represented now.
Yeah, I'm represented by an attorney. The, you know, the difficulty in that is what do you do at that point? And I went back and hit the books, and I got on the phone with my buddy Rich, and Rich in Texas, and we ended up coming up with this strategy of trying to remove the case from state court into federal court under Title 28, 1455. And that is a procedural maneuver that Title 28, United States Code 1455, gives the procedure of how to remove a court proceeding, a criminal proceeding in state court, into federal court. In the law library, I've found that there's been 239 cases that have been filed, and not one has been successful.
And by cases filed, what's the criteria for those? That you get?
Those were cases that came back on a LexisNexis search for everything in the country that has ever been reported to have been filed under Title 28, Section 1455. And, you know, granted, I would say, you know, 99% of them were probably not done correctly. Mine had some relatively minor errors as far as the procedural error in the way the document was put together, because it's not really clear. You know, it gives you the procedure, but the actual filing of the document is not clear.
They want you to be an attorney.
Exactly. They want you to have an attorney. I don't have the funds for an attorney, nor do I believe any attorney would really help you in this or have any real experience.
No. We've talked about in previous shows, the attorneys I've talked to, they do not want anything to do with this whatsoever.
Right.
At all. Oh, no. I would know anything about Article 4. No.
Exactly.
Really? You wouldn't know anything about the Constitution, section of the Constitution?
They're on the other team. They're on the 14th Amendment team.
Yeah.
And Article 4 is the other team. So what you're really doing in most cases is asking an attorney to help the other team, and they're just not going to do that.
No, they're not.
The public defender, which I'll get into in a little bit, he explained to me that he's just not going to take a case in the direction that I've taken it.
Right.
He was very polite, but...
This is the new public defender, not the gal?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not Jeanette Lee. Her only job there was to waive all my rights.
Let's get back to the research. 239 cases...
239 cases, five of them are available for reporting to be cited, and all five of them didn't make it into federal court based on 1455. So it was a very, very difficult case to even do. And I found that I'd made a mistake in the way I'd put the case together when I filed it. So that was remanded, which means I filed it in federal court, I do a removal, and then the federal judge smacks me down and says, nope, you're back in state court. But it did have an effect on the state court because it lists out exactly what's going on. And all of a sudden, several weeks late, the prosecution, after, I mean, we're going into a pre-trial hearing to where they have to have a trial by August 8th. And so they're really pushing, you know, the time clock right now is to really push and get the trial going. Well, out of the blue, with no further filings on my part, nothing from the public defender's office, it was either Monday or Tuesday of last week, I was told that the prosecution delivered a whole bunch of evidence, you know, what's called discovery. And that discovery was late. So the only thing I can attribute that to is now the powers that be at the local state court are reading through why I wanted to remove my case from state court to federal court. And it's pretty clear that the prosecution didn't want to give me any evidence at all, and that there's a real problem. So I end up on Friday, I have to go to Department 105. And the name of the judge actually escapes me at the moment. I'll see if I can look it up. Or Luis, I know, Luis, you're listening. If you remember the name of the judge, throw that in the chat room. This was a female judge. This is in a courtroom, very different. The conduct of the people, the conduct of the prosecutor, the conduct of the public defender, and most importantly, the conduct of the court staff is much more in line of what you would think would be the conduct of a courtroom. So in this courtroom, it was much more solemn, but they're handling a case. I mean, I was called up and spoke to the judge and then sat down and had to go back up again in between a case where it's two gentlemen who are charged with a very serious crime, and one of them is facing life in prison. That's the courtroom that they have me in for this ticket that the prosecution just obviously, the only reason, the public defender said it out loud in the courtroom where everybody could hear it, not while court was in session, but I think he said it loud enough to make sure everyone could hear it, is that clearly the reason why I'm in that courtroom is because the prosecutor's office, the city attorney's office, was punishing me for asserting my constitutional rights. And that is a crime. You're not allowed to prosecute somebody or punish somebody for asserting rights. And all I did throughout that case was assert my rights. And it just pissed off the prosecutor.
And so this is the new public defender that was supposedly representing you.
Yeah, new public defender.
But did you ever sign a Faretta waiver to engage this guy to speak on your behalf?
Not at all. No, and I let him know that they've never had authority to represent me. I've never agreed to any of the waivers. And he understood. You know, he said, look, it's not personal. If you want to go pro per, you can go pro per. Very, very different attitude than from... Okay. From Ann Rose or Jeanette Lee.
You went from single A to double A.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'll give you this. The public defender had every reason to believe that he truly wants to defend his clients to the best of his ability, but it's only going to be within the jurisdiction of the 14th Amendment. That he will genuinely provide the best defense that he possibly can, but that defense is going to be limited to a defense of you are a U.S. citizen and these codes apply directly to you and you have no choice but to be driving a motor vehicle. You can't even claim that it's not a motor vehicle because you're a U.S. citizen. So that's the game that they play. And the reality is, if you've canceled your driver's license and the DMV is acting honorably and they're following the law, which is they're supposed to report that the license is closed rather than suspended, as they're doing in my case, they're supposed to tell the truth. I doubt I would have ever been in the courtroom. The system would have worked. It would have been much more likely for an officer, if he pulls you over and he runs your name and he finds it's just closed, that there would be a entirely different set of circumstances that
he couldn't do anything. He couldn't act. He could the account's closed. He can't write those numbers down and bring to bear the asset that they own.
Exactly. It doesn't mean he couldn't arrest me. If the officer felt that he had the ability to arrest me, it just means you can't issue a ticket to somebody whose driver's license account is closed. That's all it means.
But if you had struck a bicyclist and there was an injured party here and witnesses, you should get arrested.
Of course.
With or without a driver's license.
And even if he thought that, let's say the officer didn't know what to do other than he knows, I can't write a ticket. You didn't hurt anybody. You didn't do anything.
He didn't do anything.
Well, he's not supposed to do anything, but let's say he did arrest me. He could arrest me and come in, and now he's got to tell the commissioner I saw him in a car for the original hearing, but they can't use all these records from the DMV where it's presumed you volunteered into the system, because the only way that record can exist is if you signed on the line and told the DMV employee, yes, everything is true and correct, and then you signed under penalty of perjury. That's the only way that record is supposed to be enforced, and in my case, it's not. That account is closed. So had the DMV been an honorable organization and provided correct information, I probably would have never been in the courtroom to begin with. That what is the most likely thing. But now we're in court, and my arguments about, hey, there is no, the license is closed. Even the prosecution included in one of their responses to the court, the letter from the DMV that said the driver's license account is closed. And the we'll just get back into going into what happened in Department 105. Everything is still, they need a waiver. They need me to waive rights in order to move forward. And I'm not willing to waive any rights, but they're very good at asking a question. I know Rich has kind of coined this that I think is phenomenal, Todd. How do you answer a question that is posed in the manner of, when did you stop beating your wife?
Yeah, very difficult.
Very difficult. No matter how you answer that question, you're in a difficult spot. As you know, and those are the types of questions.
Well, I've never beaten her is the answer.
I've never beaten her. So, but in Department 105, the judge, the first time I was called up, the public defender spoke, and his name is James. He spoke and explained to the judge that I'm just not willing to sign the Feretta waiver, that I'd rather go pro per. And then the judge said, well, he doesn't want to go pro per if he doesn't sign the waiver.
Huh?
That was her, as she was leaving the bench, that was her response. Now, she went back, and I guess she read some of the documents, read some of the paperwork, because it's a thick file. I mean, the file's 6 inches thick now. She went back and read some of the file, and after lunch came back, and I got a chance to address the court. And this is where, Todd, I'm very encouraged. It could be all a show, but this little bit of kind of movement towards recognizing Article 4 citizenship in the courts was very encouraging to me. And I got a chance to address the court. The first thing I said was that I'm an open book with regard to my political stance. I'm very open about being an Article 4 citizen, and that I am not willing to subject myself to federal citizenship. And at one point, the judge finished my sentence correctly. In other words, I was explaining that I was born a citizen of California. The type of citizenship is articulated in Article 4, and that I don't wish to, that's kind of how I said it. And then she finished my sentence, and she said, subject yourself to 14th Amendment citizenship.
Really?
And I said, yes, that's correct. Yeah. Yes,
wow.
Very much so. And I don't want to read too much into this, but she was actually looking at the prosecution when she said that. So it was not at all, I got no sense from this courtroom that this judge was openly biased against me, that she took a few minutes in a court calendar that is dealing with real criminal activity. I mean, they're dealing with really serious crimes in there, and now all of a sudden she's got to deal with this no driver's license issue? Like what is this? And now she's got this notice of removal. And she's dealing with a defendant who is now represented by a public defender, where it's clear he never wanted representation from the very beginning ever. And it also appears clear that the city attorney's office is simply punishing me for asserting my rights. So what this ended up with is they gave me a copy of the Feretta waiver. They wanted me to sign it. And I politely told the judge that I can't sign it, that I didn't get time to really go into the entire reason for signing it. And it was getting
for
late
not
in the day.
Signing it.
Of not signing it, yeah, of the reasons why I can't, because it's fairly complicated. You need a few minutes, and frankly, there wasn't a few minutes. There was a jury. They had pulled in a jury pool of 60 people who are now waiting.
Wow.
All because of my case. The court had to deal with me when I shouldn't even be in that courtroom. It should have never left the infraction courtroom. Mm-hmm. It should have never left there. So what the judge did was responded to the public defender who recommended that the hearing, which is a pretrial hearing, that hearing be trailed until Monday. And what the judge did was she trailed it until Tuesday, asked me to fill out and sign the form for the portions that I could, and then come back with an explanation of each individual portion of why I can't. So what that means, I'm guessing that this may be the first time in California history since the Feretta waiver is a statewide form that is developed and distributed by the California Judicial Council. And it is a direct result of a Supreme Court ruling that came out of Los Angeles where somebody was appointed an attorney and he lost all the way. He kept losing all the way up every division of appeal, but he stuck with it, took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And his reward was they said, you're right. You can handle your own affairs. You have to do the trial over again. So
I think they're
not
using that same form in other states as well. It's referred to as the Feretta form and waiver, Feretta waiver and other.
People, oh, it is. Okay.
People are pretty familiar with it, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty
well,
sure.
It came out of the Supreme Court, so it wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So now I have an opportunity to explain why I, as an Article 4 citizen, it's absolutely inappropriate and detrimental to my rights to petition the court via the 14th Amendment to act as my own attorney. And there is the difference. It's a phenomenal opportunity to be able to come back to court and put on the record why the Feretta waiver is inappropriate.
That's excellent. That's really good news, actually. And I'm also fascinated by that you were told that the prosecution has provided discovery. They've given, I mean, have you gotten hard copies of this so-called discovery?
I've not gotten hard copies. The reason why I've not gotten any copies is because that discovery was turned over to the public defender's office. The public defender's office is not willing to turn it over to me because I keep saying you guys don't represent me. And unless I sign the Feretta waiver and fill out all the public defender's office forms, then they're not in a position to be able to give me that evidence.
I'm confused. I thought you had to, anybody, a U.S. citizen, whoever it is, in order to get a public defender has to sign the Feretta waiver to get a defender. Is that correct?
Well, you're supposed to have, yes, you have to sign the Feretta waiver to represent yourself.
Oh, okay. I see. I got you.
So what the court did was they, you know, down in Department 103, Commissioner Omens, in a 3-second thing, she said, do you understand that under the 6th and 14th Amendment, you have the right to an attorney? I responded by saying, I understand under the 6th Amendment, I have the right to assist of counsel. And she said, you're incompetent, you're delaying court process, and I'm ready to appoint an attorney for you. And that's when the public defender stood up and said, we'll take him.
Right. Right.
And so now there's the public defender, which is, it's even in the minute order that I objected to it, that they appointed the public defender over my objections. And now we're kind of in the public defender, James, he said over and over again, you're kind of in a catch-22 situation. You're in no man's land now. And the reason why I'm in no man's land here is because the DMV didn't do their job. They're not providing truthful information. The Department 102 didn't adjudicate the case, didn't handle a proper arraignment. The Department 102 also allowed for the city attorney to file misdemeanor charges against me in retaliation for asserting my constitutional rights, which then moved it into
constitutionally protected rights.
Yes, my constitutionally protected rights, secured rights.
Yes.
And then Department 103, they then compounded the problem by getting frustrated that I wouldn't waive any rights, and in retaliation for not waiving those rights, declare me incompetent and appoint a public defender. So now the judge who's handling this in Department 105, she's got a real mess.
I'm fascinated, man, because why the hell would you have to sign anything for the court to go, we say for the record, he's representing himself. End of story. I mean,
they want you, when you read through the Feretta waiver, it's over and over and over again. It's language that you can tell has a foundation in the Sixth Amendment, but is clearly modified for the benefit of the state by the 14th Amendment. Yeah. For example, you are petitioning the court, like begging the court, can I represent myself? Can I act as my own attorney? Yeah. I don't want that term. I don't want to act as my own attorney. I just want to handle my own affairs. Yeah. Attorneys are limited in what they can do. They have a...
This is just, you might as well just go get another driver's license if you sign this.
Of course.
It's the same consent. You're just saying I'm a little slavelet. I'm back to the U.S. citizen side. Thank you. I'm in.
Absolutely.
I'm in. And now I'll represent myself and you guys will treat me like an attorney. And I'm fascinated how you can get a hold of this so-called discovery, though, because the discovery should include that there is no oath of office from this guy.
He did tell me, he said that there was an oath-looking thing in there. Right? So he's got to be careful because he can't.
There's an oath-looking thing in there. That is brilliant. That is.
Well, I say all of this in respect for the way he appears to be dealing with me.
No, I'm James, not trying to make fun of him. Attorney. I'm laughing about the general concept that there would be an oath-looking thing. I mean,
I asked him if it was signed. And he said he didn't look at it very closely, but he doesn't recall seeing a signature.
Why would you? Why would you look at anything closely? You know, the only major piece of exculpatory evidence that, despite any perceived conceptual argument you're making, Corey, about Article 4 or not, this should be gone.
No oath.
The guy shouldn't even be in a cruiser driving around. He's impersonating a peace officer. I just have to crack up, Corey. This whole thing about Trump saying law and order. I mean, he was really good about his delivery of this on the RNC. I know law and order, and it's red meat. Just people are just devouring it. Right? He's just throwing it out in the crowd. They're just eating it up. And I think to myself, law and order. Donald, law and order. How much law and order is there in California when Corey has, from the Secretary of State, in writing, unequivocally, that there is not one single oath of office for any CHP officer on file per what the statute claims should be.
Except for, they did come up with one oath of office, and that is the commissioner of the CHP.
Yep, you sent that notice to some powers that be at the court system there, and lo and behold, a few days later, his oath appears before you.
Yeah.
Right? So how much law and order do we really have in California? You have a bunch of people with costumes and badges acting like they're sworn peace officers, marauding the state.
Oh.
So how much law and order is there? I mean, you want to talk about terrorism? Well, hey, Mr. Executor of the federal government, are you going to enforce law and order with this?
I hope so. I mean, the person who is really responsible for that is the governor. You know, Toilet Brown, I'd have no faith in that guy.
No, it's
not. I mean, he's just so corrupt. There's no chance that Jerry Brown is going to step in and do anything. It's such a big deal. This is such a problem that has been dropped on this judge's lap by incompetence of other agencies and other people in the court. So I definitely don't envy the position the judge is in, because you know you're dealing with issues that, what if none of the CHP have oaths of office and this court has to recognize it? You imagine the impact that has on all the cases they're dealing with? It's just so much pressure to say, we're just gonna flush this guy down the toilet, which is what everybody else has done so far. And to the absolute credit of the judge in 105, she's given me the opportunity, rather than just trying to, like everybody else, trying to flush it down and just hurry up and get this guy convicted. She gave me a reasonable amount of time. I've had from Friday until Tuesday to come up with a written reason of why the Feretta waiver, what portions.
That's got some value. That's got some real value.
Absolutely.
That's fascinating.
And so I really want to put kudos out there, because in this two type of citizen system that they have been operating for a long time, where it's just one type of citizen, you know, slowly boiling the frog, This judge indicated that she would listen to the argument, that she was respectful. The courtroom was respectful. The bailiff was respectful. Here's another thing. The girl that is handling the court reporting, I asked her her name, and she had no problem. Gave me her name. There was nothing to indicate that these people are knowingly acting outside the law like they are in Departments 103 and 102. In Department 103 and 102, they've made it difficult to get the transcripts. I finally just found out the names of the court reporters to be able to even order the transcripts. They've just acted so rogue that when I went into Department 105, I was absolutely ready for a fight. And instead, it was a very cordial, given the circumstances, a very cordial exchange over the Feretta waiver and conducting my affairs pro per. Even the prosecutor was cordial and professional and did not appear in any way to take any of my arguments personal, unlike the prosecutor down in Departments 102 and 103, where, you know, she likened that what I was asking for as far as discovery, she came up with some murder trial and said that, you know, this guy who was subsequently convicted of murdering a cop wasn't given discovery because what he was asking for had nothing to do with the case, and then tried to say me asking for very specific documents directly related to the case is the same as that. I mean, they were just so far out of line. So so happy to report that this courtroom, at least, was operating much differently.
How much more broadened and engaged would people be if they would just, they being the court, the prosecutors that you're dealing with and the system that you're dealing with, if they would just pause for a second and contemplate the basics that we're talking about? But again, that's probably folly for me to even expect that. So, you know, but you know what, Corey, maybe what we're learning here is as you move up from single A to double A to triple A, you know, in terms of the farm league, you know, to get to the majors, that the play picks up. The level of play gets more refined, gets more professional, gets more interesting and engaging. And I'm hopeful that's what continues to happen.
Well, I hope so. I could definitely see the possibility in a courtroom setting like what I experienced on Friday that Article 4 citizens, if they found themselves in court, if the courts were to operate that way, I could absolutely see the courts correcting the error of things like the DMV, being able to deal with regularly a citizen who's a citizen of the several states and not differentiating someone who is a U.S. citizen.
You know, I found this clip that we played some time ago. This is Trey Gowdy, who's a former prosecutor. I think he might have been a federal prosecutor who's a congressman now. Let's listen to this.
But what I do know is this. Process matters. And if you doubt it, Mr. Speaker, ask a prosecutor or a police officer, both of whom, as my friends on the other side of the aisle know, both of them are members of the executive branch. What happens when a police officer fails to check the right box on a search warrant application? The evidence is thrown out, Mr. Speaker, even though he was well-intended, even though he had good motivations, even though he got the evidence, because process matters.
Hopefully that will ring true in courtroom 105, Corey.
I hope so. I mean, I think when the judge in 105, she brought up one question, she said, which I thought was actually fair. I had no problem at all with the way she questioned this. And I felt that this was a way to flush out somebody who maybe just read a couple of things on the internet and is trying to, you know, fight a court case. And she asked me, why would I file a removal to federal court if I don't believe the federal courts have any authority? That was the way she worded the question.
We've talked about that. I think that's a great question.
And did we talk about it today already?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right. So she pointed that question to me, and she's looking at the removal request that I have there. And I responded right away to say, you know, no, not at all. I do think the federal courts have authority. And that's why I filed there. But I gave her a quick example and said, you know, if there's a citizen, an Article 4 citizen in California that has a dispute with an Article 4 citizen in Arizona, then the federal courts are the appropriate authority for those two citizens to handle their dispute. And that would be under Article 3 of the Constitution. And after that answer, not once did she ever again hit me with something like, well, you don't respect the courts or anything like that. Right. She completely dropped that. So in those little tiny things, I know we're looking for, you know, a ray of light in this very, very difficult process that has gone on with the CHP lying, the DMV lying, the courts in Departments 102 and 103 lying. But we got to Department 105, and I would say the entire thing was very fair given the totality of circumstances and what this judge is now having to deal with. And I think it's something that I know Luis noticed. Another judge came in the courtroom and was observing. There was the sheriff's supervisor came into the courtroom. He actually saw us in the hallway and said hello. Completely different demeanor in the courts, in that rather than being just overbearing rogue, I don't know how else to put it, rogue in Departments 102 and 103, this was much more what I envision the courts would be like, where you could have a fair shake. I believe that this opportunity to explain why in writing and not have to do it in just a quick on your feet, right. You got to say right now, and if you don't say it exactly the way I want it, well, then we're just moving forward because you waive all your rights. That's not how I was treated in there, and that's exactly how the court process should work. The law will take care of itself. If there's no such thing as an Article 4 citizen and there's no such thing as a vehicle and you all have to have driver's licenses no matter what, then the law will take care of that.
That's right.
But that's not the case.
This judge has the discretion to move on and state for the record that you're pro per. This is just, you know, hey, this is how we always do it. We always get everybody to sign this waiver, man. So I'm going to have to, you know, get a little more meat on the bone here before I use discretion.
And I agree. I would say if I were in her position, you know, I'd want to cover my butt too and make sure that, you know, whoever this defendant is, that he puts in writing something that says why it can't be signed. So I thought that was very fair.
Did the specter of you're a sovereign citizen ever be, was it ever raised?
Never came up other than, you know, at arm's length when she said, why would you file in the federal court if you don't think they have any authority?
Yep.
That was the closest thing to a sovereign citizen that
allegation
she brought up.
Or perception. Yeah. Which, of course, those new to this, we're not sovereign citizens.
Exactly.
So that's outstanding, Corey.
Very good news out of the court.
Yeah.
With that, I'll put up my, I'll have it ready by Tuesday. I'll work on it again tomorrow. I've got the first draft available on how I'll be dealing with the Feretta waiver. But Todd, think about this. What an incredible opportunity, regardless of what has gone on. What an incredible opportunity to address something and make it part of a court record that is a direct result of a Supreme Court decision. This is an amazing opportunity to be able to forward the goals of being an Article 4 citizen that I think is really a great opportunity.
It's evidence of your continuing refinement of having a strategy to make a difference. And I would, it's that time again, everybody, to hear me pitch. Why aren't you sending some support Corey's way? To use the no agenda euphemisms, don't be a douchebag. Let's support Corey, please. You know, this business he's involved with, he's being respectful, he's being professional, he's being thorough, he's doing research, he's not being reactive, he's being proactive. Who else is doing this? Who else is doing what he's doing? This is about a much, much bigger picture than no piece of plastic in your pocketbook. And that's why we talked about at the beginning of this show about globalism and about communism and about totalitarianism. That's what's at stake. This is the doorway into asserting and enforcing, the Bill of Rights. And there's lots and lots of reasons why those rights need to be enforced. If you're listening to this, then you've already pretty much understand that. So I want to table our Article 4 Karma session till next week, Corey. We got a letter in from a listener out in Utah, which I don't have in front of me, which I really want to share with you. It involves his use of common law ID. He sent another postal order. I went to the post office to cash it with a common law ID. I had an exchange with the supervisor there. They wouldn't cash it. I want to get in the weeds with that next episode, bring that up, share with you the details of that. And unless you have some support you'd like to acknowledge right now.
You know, I've been so busy. I know there's been some support that has come in.
We have some recurring people that are subscribers, and those are the backbone of Agenda 31. We would like to see additional people step up. And if you can't afford to make a donation, you can do it at agenda31.org right there. You can click on subscriptions or on the PayPal link right there. You can do it one time or you can do it recurring through the subscription levels. A strategy to make a difference would be to share this podcast with your friends, to tell people about it, turn them on to it. Talk about these issues. Keep an open mind.
And if you're in Los Angeles on Tuesday and you want to observe the court, it's at 14400 Irwin Street. Let me just double check that. 14400 Irwin Street Mall, E-R-W-I-N Street Mall. That's in Van Nuys. And it's in Department 105 at 8:30 in the morning.
Which day?
That's the 8th floor.
Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Next Tuesday in the morning, everybody.
Next Tuesday in the morning, Tuesday the 26th, 8:30 a.m. in Department 105. And if you do show up, be respectful. This is I have every reason to continue to support the way the judge in Department 105 was handling the case. And it would be great to have people there. If you want to see how the case is going and see it in action and you've got the time, I really encourage you to be there. You'll be able to meet, I know Lewis will be there. There'll be hopefully some other people there as well. But it is really an interesting exchange.
It's outstanding. It's definitely having a strategy to make a difference. And that is what we advocate here. You've been listening to the Lowest Risk, Highest Reward podcast in the universe. This has been Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe, and we appreciate you tuning in. And please, please figure out what your strategy is to make a difference.
For this fiasco to be held accountable.
the last line of defense. And if we don't do it, nobody's gonna do it.
Control every action. Control every action.
Support and share agenda31.org.